It may be too early to tell, but it is certainly not too early to worry about this year's chances for Champagne. A late frost in the hillside vineyards of Champagne in France may have scotched the grapes this year, if we may mix drink metaphors. Since the 18th century, Champagne has been an elixir of sorts, equally effective in making good times better and bad times bearable. There are those who do not like bubbles in the wine, Napoleon for one. But generations still pay homage to that insightful Benedictine Dom Pérignon, whose accidental discovery prompted him to say,
Je bois les étoiles. I am drinking stars.
Our friend Alice Furlow joins us from radio station WOMR on Cape Cod. Allie, hello.
Hello, hello.
How bad is it?
Well, I talked to Monsieur Guillain de Montgolfier, who's the head of the family-owned Bollinger Champagne Company. He doesn't sound discouraged. He says 60 acres of grape buds were killed. That's one-third of the grapes from the various vineyards that they need to make their champagne. And with good weather, he says, the loss can be made up.
So, what kinds of grapes are we talking about here?
Well, all champagne is made from three kinds of grapes: the Pinot Noir, which is really navy blue, and the Pinot Meunier, which is a lighter colored red grape, and Chardonnay, which are white. And the champagne firms vary the proportions. It depends on what character you want your champagne to have. Anyway, champagne is different from all other wines. It's not only a blended wine, but it's a sort of manufactured wine.
Well, now, it sounds like a frost might mean a bad year for business, but since the wine is blended, it sounds like it wouldn't necessarily produce a bad wine. I mean, a bad maker would produce a bad wine, but a bad year would not.
I don't think they worry about years the way Burgundy or Bordeaux would. Most champagne is not vintage in that sense. The champagne houses want their wines to be consistent. If you buy a bottle of Mumm or Roederer, you want to know that you tasted the same thing that you got last time. And so they do blend it, and they also put quite a lot of old, of a very good vintage. They mix it in the casks before they bottle it. But there is vintage champagne. It's terribly expensive, and that is wine that's made only from the grapes of that year.
What would it set us back?
Monsieur, another monsieur I talked to, no, a nice man called Tim in New York, told me $120.
Oh, well.
Well worth it, don't you think?
Well, I do and I don't. I mean, in these troubled times with war and economic crises and so on, I mean, should we even be thinking very much about champagne, or maybe only thinking about it secretly?
I see what you mean. It does cost a lot in troubled times. During World War I, champagne making went right on. A young American poet, Alan Seeger, wrote a tribute to Champagne and the men killed on that soil before he himself was killed there in 1916. And here it is: Drink to the dead, full of love for their cherished land. They ask for no more eloquent proof of tenderness. And in the juice of the vine, which has ripened in the same spot where they have fallen, oh, moisten your lips as though you were giving them a kiss of farewell.
So, Allie, what do you think is more damaging to Champagne, the frost or the recent boycotting of French products in the run-up to the war in Iraq?
Well, Linda, now that France has been added to the axis of evil,
Yes.
boycotting has affected champagne sales in the USA, I'm told. But champagne is more than merely French, don't you think? I mean, it belongs to the world. Now, there was Madame Lily Boulanger, who was the hands-on head of the firm for many years, once gave an interview about champagne in English to the London newspaper The Daily Mail, which seems to sum it all up. She says, quote, "I drink it when I am happy and when I am sad. Sometimes I drink it when I am alone. When I have company, I consider it obligatoire. I trifle with it if I am not hungry and drink it when I am. Otherwise, I never touch it unless I am thirsty."
Well, we have a bottle, and you have a bottle.
I have a lovely bottle of Bollinger. Okay, now, you probably know better than I how to open champagne.
Well, give us the rundown, and we will follow along with you.
I have been given instructions by an expert. Hang on. Now, you remove the lovely gold foil.
We remove the foil. Okay.
Don't shake the bottle. Now, you hold it with one hand on the bottom, and with the other hand, you twist in the right direction. Very, very slowly. Okay, I'm doing it slowly.
Whoop! Beautiful.
Well, oh. I'm going to toast you all in a jelly glass of Bollinger champagne. You know, really what amazes me is, while drinking in a jelly glass, people apparently in the Belle Époque in Paris at Maxime's used to drink champagne out of women's slippers. Can you imagine how it felt to put your slipper back on after some drunken boulevardier has been drinking out of it? This is unbelievable.
Cheers, Allie.
Cheers to us.
Reporter Allie Furlow speaking with us from WOMR in Cape Cod.
Oh, I drank some champagne from your shoe. La la la, I was drunk by the time I got through. La la la. For I didn't know as I raised that cup, it had taken two bottles to fill the thing up. It was I who stepped on your dress, la la la. The skirts all came off, I confess, la la la. Revealing for all of the others to see just what it was that endeared you to me.
This is Weekend Edition from NPR News, la la la. I'm Linda Wertheimer.